games like USC, Notre Dame, and we saw Peyton play a couple times this last year or so, and it just happened to fall on this weekend. So I asked my son, "Hey, do you want to go down to see the game?" And he kind of looked at me like, "You know we're probably gonna get killed, right?" And he was like, "You know what? Let's do it." And so I'm excited to make the trip, man. You know, last time I was down in Tuscaloosa was Dobbs, the year Dobbs almost pulled it off. So it's obviously a little bit different now, the way the teams have kind of lined up and the talent level. But I'm excited to get back down to Tuscaloosa.
Does this game still mean something for you, Joey? I mean, you're a guy that when you played, you had some amazing success, you and Peyton and those guys, against Alabama. But now with the 12-game losing streak and just can't quite seem to get over the hump, does it still mean as much?
It means a lot to me, and it means a lot to a lot of people. It means a lot to a lot of coaches and former players. You know, obviously with the 12-game streak, you know, things haven't been it hasn't been close, and you know, you're hopeful for that to turn around sooner or later. But I just, you know, it's just going to be tough for them to go down with everything that Alabama poses, especially offensively. It's interesting. You know, you look over the years, over really the last decade, look at Alabama's defense, but this past year, you know, they're averaging 50 points a game, over 540 yards of total offense, man. It's just, it'd be tough for Tennessee to go down there to win. But to me, this is still the game on the schedule. And I know that's kind of changed for a lot of different people for a lot of different reasons, too. Some people may look at the Florida game because they're in the East and, you know, a lot of people don't like Florida, and myself included. But Alabama, to me, is always going to be the game on the schedule.
We're talking to former Tennessee wide receiver Joey Kent. And yeah, Joey, you, of course, played at a time where Tennessee's winning at such a high level. Can you describe what Tennessee football has meant to you from playing for the Vols, the relationships you've had with former coaches and teammates, and continuing to follow what's gone on with the program here 2 decades later?
Yeah, I've always said this is the best decision I ever made to attend the University of Tennessee. You know, I obviously have a lot of great friends, a lot of great teammates, played on some great teams, but also met my wife. You know, the guys that I came in with in 1992, we're still best friends. You know, we've been in each other's weddings. You know, we're active with each other's kids. We talk all the time. Just relationships that you build just from the football standpoint, but also just off the field, man, they kind of translate. And they're still strong, you know, over 25 years later. And it's just, I mean, to me, you know, I made the best decision to come to the University of Tennessee. You know, leaving the state of Alabama, you know, obviously I could have gone to Alabama or Auburn. But Tennessee has been really good to me. And I've lived in state longer than I've lived in the state of Alabama. And I call it Nashville home. And it's a, you know, it's a city that I've grown to love, and it's just a short drive from Nashville to Knoxville. So I get up to Knoxville a few times a year or two. So it's been a good ride, man. And we had some good times when I was there.
Do you imagine this kind of piggybacking on what you just said, but do you think it would be hard for you to leave the state of Alabama today if you were being recruited as one of the top prospects and Twitter existed,
Taylor,
Joey?
Don't do that to me. Don't.
I mean, could you imagine what you would be dealing with just every time you got on your phone and it's like, oh, one of the top prospects in the state of Alabama has Tennessee number one on his board? I mean, there's no telling what people would be tweeting you.
I know. I'm glad we didn't have Twitter or social media or even a cell phone. This is how I'm kind of showing my age a little bit. I didn't have a cell phone until I graduated from Tennessee. But yeah, I mean, the pressures that these young men have to face, the decisions that they make, can impact them just by tweeting something. We've seen, you know, a couple things that have happened over the years as far as social media and phones and cameras and all that good stuff. It's a tough environment for these young athletes to deal with. And you know, if I was a recruit coming out of Alabama doing that right now, honestly, it'd be a tough decision, because one of the reasons why I came to Tennessee was Alabama really wasn't throwing the ball that much when I came back in the early 90s. But now things have kind of changed. Their offense, you know, over the last 4 or 5 years has been really prolific. So it's just one of those things where I'm glad I came out when I came out. And I just feel like I made the best decision for me during that time.
We're glad too, Joey. We're glad too.
Hey, Joe, and I want to ask your thoughts on an in-state guy actually who's developed. He dealt with a social media issue a couple years ago, but Juwan Jennings, now in his fifth year, a guy who's become a leader on the field and within the program, and you can tell how much he cares about Tennessee. What have you thought watching his development and watching how Juwan's played the game at UT?
One word: proud. He's come a long way. Admittedly, he had some growing up to do, and he had some bumps in the road obviously he was off the team for a while, and I think that gave him a different perspective of how important football is to him, how important Tennessee is to him, and it shows the way he plays. I wish we had more Juwan Jennings on the team, the way he plays the game. He is, to me, he's the leader of that offense as far as just emotionally, physical, the way he plays. I love when he catches the ball, 'cause you don't know what's going to happen. One guy's not going to bring him down. He just plays with that tenacity that I wish more guys on the team play with.
Yeah, I love the fact that he's a leader on this team, but it'll be interesting to see how the trickle-down effect takes hold and if Juwan can sort of leave a legacy for others to emulate.
You know what? It's tough for a receiver because so many things have to go right for you to make a play or make an impact on the game. Obviously, the line has to block. The quarterback has to make the right reads. You have to make the right reads as a receiver. Obviously, you have to catch the ball. It's tough to be, you know, it's tough to be that leader as a receiver, especially the way the offense has been really inconsistent over the last 4 or 5 games. It's tough to be that leader, but definitely he's that emotional guy, somebody that they look to me to get them going. And if I were the offensive coordinator, I would try to get him the ball early and often because he just brings so much to the table after he catches the ball.
You're right. Joey Kent's with us, former Tennessee wide receiver, our Call of All segment. So, Joey, with what you see going on with Tennessee football right now, what do you want to see moving forward? Let's say the second half of this season, what are you looking for from the Vols to see where the program might be moving forward as well?
I think we've seen it over the last couple of games. Against Mississippi State, you saw a defense that created turnovers, stopped the run, got after the quarterback some. How successful they'll be on Saturday, we don't know. But going forward, you know, UAB, you have South Carolina, UAB, Missouri, Kentucky, Vanderbilt. I just want to see game-to-game improvement. And I think we've seen that over the last basic game and a half of guys just really competing. And it's good to see the seniors making plays. You know, that's a good sign. Whenever you see seniors going out there and making plays, that lets you know that they're still bought in. And hopefully, like you said, that trickles down to – you know, the younger guys, to see a guy like Tyler Byrd, who, you know, he's basically a reserve special team. He's a special teams player guy and a reserve receiver. For him to still be bought in and make plays like he did against Mississippi State, that bodes well for the younger guys that can look at a guy like him and say, hey, if I just continue to work and put yourself in the right situations, your time – your number will be called and you can make a big play for the team. And so that's what I'm looking for the rest of the season, for them just to continue just to buy in, compete, play clean games, and try to get a victory for the Vols.
Now, Joey, I know you stream us as much as you can, being in Nashville and, you know, working, but you might not have heard, Josh is totally on board, and he has subsequently gotten me on board with the strategy of the Arkansas high school football team that doesn't ever kick the ball to the other team.
I actually saw them. They actually came to Nashville, Franklin, right outside of Nashville. And I saw them play Ravenwood, which is a team in Franklin. I don't know, man. That's
it's so crazy. It could work, right?
I just I like con- conventional football. I do think that we have to do some things, you know, either special teams or maybe go for it on fourth down, like fourth and seven, something that you wouldn't normally do. I think we should kind of mix some things up defensively, but I think that would be too gimmicky, honestly. I just don't like seeing a program like Tennessee resort to something like that in order to be competitive or to try to win a game. I think obviously Alabama has more athletes and more talent than Tennessee does, but if you just go out and play hard and play a clean game, limited turnovers, hey, you have to make a play or two against Alabama. You do. You just either it's on special team defense, you have to make a play to help your situation. And if they do that, I think they'll be fine. Yes, I do think they need to take some chances on you know, a fourth down or a fake punt or whatever. But I'm a more traditional guy, man. I would love to see Tennessee just go out and just compete and see what happens.
A wide receiver who's okay punting the football, Joey, what happened to you?
I know. Yeah. I guess it's my old age, right?
No, I think the points you're making would make a lot of sense. And, Joey, you mentioned you're making the trip with your son. I know you want to see Tennessee win, but how much do you want to see your kids see Tennessee have success at a really high level?
Man, you just said a lot there, because I have a 15-year-old daughter and a 13-year-old son, and you know, obviously they know about the history of Tennessee, and they love Tennessee. They're fans, and they pull for them, and they get upset when they lose. But they haven't seen Tennessee win like consistently since they've been alive. And you know, I can talk about, you know, when I played, I can talk about, you know, 1998 national championship, but they're looking at me like that's 1800s almost, because it's just so long ago. You know,
it's before cell phones. Like, yeah.
Right. And you know, I'm obviously really good friends with T, and they have a good, you know, relationship with him, and they know what he did for the university and Peyton as well, and all, you know, all the rest of, you know, my former teammates, but they haven't seen it. And realistically, every game I've come to for the last, I guess, 4 or 5 years with them, we've lost. So they haven't seen Tennessee win live in maybe 4, 5, 6 years. And so it's a tough situation. And you see that with a lot, pretty sure a lot of parents kind of struggle with that, as far as, you know, you're a Tennessee fan and you're hopeful that your kids will become a Tennessee fan. But, you know, kids can be fickle sometime. And unless your child is committed to University of Tennessee as far as being a fan, it's been tough to kind of relive that with them and have that joy, because we invest so much emotionally with this program. And, you know, I'm a fan. Obviously I'm a former player, but I'm just a fan now that has no input on wins or losses. And so, you know, you get emotionally involved with not a lot of return over the last 10 years. So it's been tough, but again, we're gonna make the trip, man. We're gonna have our orange on, and we're gonna yell and scream. And when things go right, and maybe kind of sit down when things don't go so well. But we're just looking forward to just seeing Tennessee play on Saturday.
Yeah, we need Tennessee to be good. To bring this back to perspective for everybody listening, we cannot have Joey Kent writing a tuition check outside of the state of Tennessee to another SEC program. It's just not happening.
No.
In 15 and 13, we got to act fast.
That is funny. No, they're bona fide Tennessee fans, and they love the orange, and they know the history. They, you know, obviously you just want to see them enjoy it and see what Tennessee football is all about when we're winning. It's no other feeling out there to be involved in a program like Tennessee when we're successful.
Yeah, you're right about that. A lot of Tennessee fans nodding along with you there, Joey, when you say that. Hope you have a safe trip this week and have a good time with your son at the Tennessee-Alabama game this weekend. Thanks so much for taking some time to join us here, and hope to see you in Knoxville again sometime soon as well.
All right, Josh, Heather. Thanks for having me.
Joey Kent, former Tennessee wide receiver. He was a great one at UT, and as you can tell, still cares a lot about what's going on with UT.
Yeah, just, you know, went 80 yards on play number one,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, one of the
Most iconic.
One of the favorite plays for so many Tennessee fans, because that play had a big impact on not only that game and that team, but the program moving forward as well. So great to have Joey Kent on. Always enjoy him joining us here on the show and on the station. We'll come back. John Wilkerson at 1:30. A lot of football to talk about this afternoon on Sports 180. We'll be with you until 3 o'clock when Sports Talk will take over on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. Back on Sports 180, thank you for being with us here this Thursday afternoon. Moving along, getting ready for Sports Talk at 3 o'clock. We'll talk some football with John Wilkerson when he joins us a little less than 10 minutes from right now. Midday Sports Minute coming up in a few from Joel Silverberg as well. Joey Kent, enjoy talking to him. Last segment for our Call of All segment, Tennessee-Alabama week. Probably means a little bit more to him than it does the average Tennessee fan or even average Tennessee player because of his history in the game. He's from Huntsville, Alabama, and he's making the trip this week, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and I know how he feels, too, because I'm at the 50-50 mark of living in Texas versus living in Tennessee. Yeah. I've now split my life between the two places. So next year, I will have lived in Tennessee longer, and it's just so weird. And, you know, he calls Nashville home, we call here home, and it's just... You get so associated with your college identity and you just try and think, golly, what would it be like if this was different? And, you know, when people are probably like, man, you still root for that team? Like, they're terrible or whatever. You kind of pick up, you stand up for them because it's like, no, I can say they're terrible, but it's like picking on a family member. Like, you can't say that. I can say that, but you can't.
Yeah. It's Tennessee football right now.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah, Vol Twitter's probably in that way. A lot of complaining about UT, and then somebody else takes a shot, and they rally together. Now, sometimes in a very aggressive manner.
Very aggressive. You know what? They are not on Vol Twitter. They are not as conservative as football coaches who won't try anything new. They stick to the script, man.
I would say. Realistically, Tennessee's not going to do this Arkansas high school approach. And I've said, if Jeremy Pruitt said that's what we're doing this week, I would back him. But I do think what Joey said there, they need to be a little more aggressive in certain situations. If Tennessee has the ball at its own 42-yard line and it's 4th and 6, go for it.
Why not?
Yeah.
Who cares that this? I mean, you know, what do you have to lose? You might catch him off guard and score,
right?
Like he did Georgia, play number, you know, the first play of the, or first drive of the game.
When this isn't your week in, week out plan, the idea of it's 4th and 15, you're at your own 9. Going for it probably doesn't make a whole bunch of sense, although you can punt it to them and they can still score in 2 plays. So that's why I would say if Jeremy Pruitt says, no, we're going for it every time, I'll back him on that. But that's also not what you do every week, and you have to get the buy-in from your players. And David Ubbin's story with The Athletic today, he talked to the coach, and he said, look, you have to make sure people know this is what you're doing. That's why a midseason move to do it would be pushed back. If Tennessee were to lose 65-3 doing that, then yeah, it wouldn't be received too well Sunday and Monday, and people would be saying this guy has no business being the coach, he should be fired. And that part I do get.
Yeah, I totally get it. But again, I think, you know, like you're saying, changing some of your tendencies, just being more aggressive, going for it. I mean, because at this point, what do you have to lose? Mm-hmm. I honestly don't think whatever Jeremy Pruitt does, he's going to get fired on Monday. I just don't see that happening because look who his athletic director is. Look who hired him. They're not going to fire that guy. So just try it. I mean, try something new, because again, trying to beat Alabama at their own game at this point in time, it's not working. It's not going to work. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying use this strategy against Kentucky and Vanderbilt. Right. We're talking about Alabama here, you know, and I was going to make a smart aleck comment when you were like, yeah, they could score in 2 plays. I was like, no, it might take 4 if Jerry Jeudy doesn't win paper, rock, scissor. You know, I mean, they're just playing. And I think David, he said it perfectly yesterday during our segment with him. He was like, I know it's the game of football right now, but they're not even really playing the same sport at this point in time because of just the talent. And this isn't just because Tennessee is on the track that they're on. Alabama's just at another level. Everybody they play. I mean, look at what Duke didn't have a shot at beating Alabama. Yeah. Alabama beat them 42-3, you know? So I think going at them at an unorthodox way, like you weren't going to beat Muhammad Ali just standing there and taking all the punches that he was going to throw, right? You were going to have to do something a little different to try and beat him.
How good of a rock, paper, scissors player are you?
Decent. I wouldn't say it's my strongest game.
I'm pretty good.
Pretty good at
just
guessing.
Just go with rock. Nothing beats rock.
paper beats rock.
We'll come back. Midday Sports Minute with Joel Silverberg coming up.
You just cheat. I can see this already.
John Wilkerson, another half hour to go. We'll be with you for another 90 minutes. This is FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. Back on Sports 180, thanks for being with us. 90 minutes to go. It'll be Sports Talk at 3 o'clock. John Wilkerson will be a part of the show this afternoon. He's a part of Sports 180 for the next half hour. Hello, John.
Hi.
How's everything going?
It's going well. You all?
Did you think the Nats were going to sweep?
No.
Did you call that?
No, okay. Did not.
This is unbelievable.
You see a team that was able to survive the wild card game and then win a fifth and deciding game against the Dodgers, and it's almost like, hey, this is rarefied air. They have never been there before as a franchise that's on the winning side of something like that. I mean, they'd lost the National League Championship Series before, had never won one, and this is just a team that feels awfully good about itself. And how cool is that for Yan Gomes?
Yeah,
I think
for
it's
sure.
So cool. Yeah, and Scherzer.
Knoxville resident, taxpayer.
All right.
Yeah, and that's a team, they can win it, can't they?
They sure can.
With that pitching, as well as they're playing as a team, it's not just the pitching, but the pitching is really good. And in a series of seven games at the most, that can really matter.
Yeah, you got Scherzer, you got Strasburg, and that's just getting it started. If I had a concern, it would be their bullpen. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, looks like they're okay with it. So if they are, I am. But I still think that whichever team emerges from the American League would be the favorite going in.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. Do you think Houston ends up being that team? Yankees are down, but they do get game four at home. If they win that, it's a winner-take-all in three games.
That's right. And Greinke's going tonight, which, gosh, right now you would have to expect that the series is going to be tied coming out of tonight's contest.
Yeah, and they went out and got him for the opposite reason. The thought would be, hey, we have these two guys. If similar to the Nationals, they went out and got Corbin and said, hey, if he can be our number three, we'll take that kind of number three. Same with Greinke. If he can be our number three behind Verlander and Cole.
Yeah, how awesome will that be?
Sure.
Golly.
Not the most awesome.
Yes.
I remember John McClain on with you guys the day they signed Greinke, and he was just freaking out. So it hasn't quite panned out the way they planned.
But who knows? Maybe tonight he takes that step and lives up to what was their expectation when they added him to their mix. But it's we'll see. What I've been impressed with is how well the Yankees have pitched. Because they just, now granted, history tells you that they were going to just dismantle the Twins, which is what they always do when they meet in the playoffs, and they did that. But how well they've pitched. Been a little surprised that their offense, after getting off to such a good start, game one against Greinke, has not really been that existent since then.
Yeah, so we'll see if that changes. And then, of course, the complaint about a de-juiced baseball, which I think was being used for both teams, I don't know, but I think that's often the case. We got to complain about something, one way or the other.
So would you say de-juiced or decaf?
Oh, I like decaf.
Oh, I like that. Somebody from The Ringer tweeted out, okay, so you juice balls during the season. They need to either continue with the juice balls or just do mixed balls, and they could have not only juiced mixed in with the unjuiced in the playoffs, but also throw in some of those gender reveal balls. So, you know, they just explode, and all of a sudden it's blue. All of a sudden it's pink. You wouldn't know what's going on here. Yeah, I thought it was a great suggestion.
Baseball-themed gender reveals are the best gender reveals because that's a lot of pressure on the guy to connect. And I shouldn't say typically, but very often you'll see videos come out of them being unsexful.
Mm-hmm.
So
on the ground. Yeah, it's like, it's dribbling out pink.
Yeah, the best I've seen was a guy taking the pitch, and it was outside, his good eye, ball one. But you really only had one shot at it.
And it's also tough if the mom-to-be is the one that's doing the pitching.
Sure, a lot of pressure.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's easier said than done at that home run derby to deliver the ball where the hitter wants it.
Yeah, so sometimes you stand to the side and you just kind of toss it up to where it's like BP, and other times it's a full-on pitch, which who knows what can happen at that point. So the whole gender reveal thing is it's quite unique just to see, one, when they go right and the outstanding reactions you see, as well as those that don't go as planned. And it's like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, yeah. I think they've run their course. Just do like Josh and them. Don't find
out. You have a brush fire that started with one that I happen to see the footage of.
And,
just goodness gracious.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Anytime you wind up calling 911, it's not been the ideal gender reveal.
Yeah, I'm pro gender reveal.
I'm not anti.
Yeah, right. Kelly and I have not found out. We've waited until the birth, doing that again, and that's worked for us. But whatever somebody wants to do, have at it. But if you're going to go wild with the way you do the gender reveal, good luck, because things can go awry.
Yeah, I just think you should probably steer away from anything that involves firearms and or open flame.
How come? So, speaking of...
Because the one thing you don't want to see is the Darwin Awards Twitter feed sure. being one that happens to share the footage right? from yeah. your gender reveal.
You don't want that Twitter account to be interested in yes. your gender reveal. That's a good point. Tennessee football hoping to not be picked up by that
Correct.
Twitter account this week as well.
Darwin Awards would be fitting for some of the performances that have been turned in by several teams yeah. against the Crimson Tide.
So yeah, Heather agreed today to talk about the game.
Yeah, I did. I was like, oh, John's coming on. We can finally talk about it.
Yeah, sure. I heard the start of the show, and I was tuning in just to see, is today the day? And I happen to be glad to be a part of the festivities.
I think one of the things I have a hard time keeping into perspective is they're not just doing this to Tennessee. They're doing this to everybody. I mean, Nick Saban has truly ruined college football for everyone.
Is that what's happened?
Yeah, 100%. Well, except Alabama fans. Uh-huh. But actually, I think it's ruined it for them, too, because they don't even get excited when they go like 11-1 anymore, which would just, I mean, if you gave me an 11-1 season that I actually got to cover, I would probably die of shock.
And for some, you've started to see it ramp up. The fact that two of the last 3 years, they've come away empty-handed. And when that's the case, it's like, well, I just... not so sure how long we can keep going down this road. And it's like, really?
Yeah.
It's like, that's actually great.
Yeah.
It pops up just about every time. Clemson's first win against Bama. Yeah, I don't know. Look at what Deshaun Watson just did to him. That's true, but it could be the fact that Deshaun Watson is one of the best quarterbacks we've seen at the college football level. And then they lose to Auburn, I guess, right at the end of the regular season. And it's like, well, look at last year, look at this year. They end up winning the national title that season.
Correct.
And then, of course, Clemson last year with, again, a program that's at that kind of level. So it's been Clemson and Alabama. They're the two best, and others are trying to show that they can be at that level. Georgia's knocked on the door, but it also lost to South Carolina this past week. And Oklahoma's been knocking on the door.
Mm-hmm.
Can it break through? I mean, we have a few programs there, but it's Alabama and Clemson that have clearly been leading the way.
Yeah, it really doesn't count now as an official college football playoff unless the Tigers and Tide are present. They right. call the roll, and then they just see, all right, who are the two other teams that are going to lose in the semis?
Oh, Ohio State, you're up this year. Oh, Notre Dame. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, it's like a doctor's appointment that you're scheduling 6 months in advance. You go ahead and schedule it, and then if you have to change it by a day or something, you do. Same with the playoff. You go ahead and pencil in Alabama and Clemson to play, and then adjust the schedule later on.
Yeah, and I do think that you can actually put Alabama and Clemson in pen, and then you pencil in Oklahoma, because especially sure. when they start outside the top five, when the first rankings are coming out, then you know it's okay, go ahead and write in the Sooners. They're going to be there. They've done a pretty amazing job of just holding down, as much as anybody else, a third spot in that mix of four. And as to who is the other one, what's really interesting is I do wonder, as we talk about top five teams in college football, as we did yesterday on the Power Poll, would Clemson, if it weren't the defending national champions, would Clemson right now be still getting as much favor in terms of college football playoff talk? Because you look at the strength of schedule and their
terrible.
Strength of victory, and right now, would their best win be Texas A&M?
Yes.
It'd have to be, yeah.
yeah.
Because we were asking about it, and it was from Stuart Mandel's mailbag earlier today. Who's the second best team in the ACC? Mandel abstained from giving an answer.
Yeah. I mean, Wake Forest was undefeated. They just lost that incredible shootout to Louisville.
But the best win for both Bama and Clemson would be A&M, right?
It's a
Bama's
great,
on the road.
Great point. That's right.
Yeah. But for both to this point, you would say the same about Alabama and Clemson.
So how could you hang that perhaps as enough to warrant one of the four spots in the college football playoff?
I wouldn't put either of them in. How about that?
But you know it's going to get tougher for Alabama.
Take your credential away.
Because Alabama will face LSU and Auburn. That's guaranteed.
Yeah,
if they remain unbeaten, they'll play Georgia. So they would have something that they could say, "This here is our resume." But Clemson doesn't have that.
Yeah, they have to be perfect. I mean, and that's hard. That's a lot of pressure when you know you cannot lose.
Well, I don't know that that's the case. I think they could lose,
really?
Be 12-1. Yeah, because they've done it before. Yeah, they lost to Pitt. They lost to Pitt. They lost to Syracuse.
But I feel like this year is even worse, though.
Yeah,
because Virginia, you know, the media was trying to pop up Virginia at the beginning, and they're not that good.
And you've got 12 undefeated teams right now. Not that all of them are still going to. Not that
right. Ohio State and Wisconsin are going to play maybe twice.
Correct.
Yeah. So Georgia's already lost.
Yep.
So they're removed from the unbeaten category. So and if Clemson could lose a game later, so could any of these other teams.
True. I mean, Oklahoma's beaten Texas.
Right.
And we'll see exactly what they wind up matching up against in the Big 12 title game. And of course, they also have to avoid the missteps as well. Because if they happen to backslide against Oklahoma State or trip up a second, if there is a rematch with Texas.
Mm-hmm. Let's say Bama, Ohio State, and Oklahoma are all unbeaten.
Mm-hmm.
But those are your only unbeatens. I think a 12-1 Clemson would get in over every other one loss team.
Over an 11-1 LSU?
That was my first thought.
No way.
Yeah.
No, two top 10 wins.
Hold on. No way. No way that Clemson, which has been in the playoff 4 straight years, won the national championship last year and won its conference title. No way that team gets in over a team that didn't win its division. Of course there's a way. Of course. It's likely. Clemson would get in most likely over LSU. It's Clemson. This isn't Washington. This isn't Utah. This is Clemson, which won the national title last year. I get it. Yeah, I get it.
And arguably LSU's only loss would be to Alabama.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
And let's say in this scenario, that's true.
Mm-hmm. That's right. What if it's a 1-point loss, and it's pretty obvious that they just got nailed by the officials?
But if you're saying the SEC, well, the SEC gets the benefit of the doubt. Clemson gets the benefit of the doubt because of 4 straight playoff appearances.
You're probably right. I shouldn't say never.
3 national title games and 2 national titles. Yeah, Clemson with Trevor Lawrence and that offense, they get a benefit of the doubt as well.
That would be just sad. I don't know.
Why would it be sad?
Because they have not played anybody. Like you just said, they played one out-of-conference game that actually even meant anything. It meant more than even playing in the conference.
Okay, but we are talking about a 12-1 conference champ. It's not like I'm saying, hey, put in 9-3 Clemson.
No, I totally get what you're saying.
Yeah.
Totally get what you're saying. But
LSU, you probably would.
Yeah. LSU has just done, I feel like they've done so much.
I would be
very upset for LSU. I could imagine. Those Ed Orgeron tears that are orange colored because of all the Red Bull.
Yeah. So I'm if 12-1 Clemson wins the ACC title game, don't be surprised if it's in the playoff. That would be my message, especially since we've seen it happen a couple of times. All right. We'll come back another segment with John Wilkerson in studio with us here talking college football. And you know what? It's going to end up being Utah that actually does get in. We'll come back here on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. Back on Sports 180, John Wilkerson with us for another segment. Sports Talk coming up at 3 o'clock. So I'm a big Clemson homer now. You're labeling me here.
Yeah, totally am. Man, especially when they, you know, in that championship game. If they do have to suffer one loss, I just think it opens the conversation. There would at least have to be, and you're right, I should have said there's no way that Clemson would get in. I'm sure they would.
John, find the scare the rest of the way. They've had one scare to this point, North Carolina. Here's Clemson's remaining schedule. This Saturday, it's an early kick, noon, in Louisville. Then home for Boston College, home against Wofford, maybe that's it. At NC State, home against Wake Forest. They'll close out the season at South Carolina. Could that be it? Carolina was able to score points. Now you have Helsinki. That's a team that just beat Georgia, so you can point that out. Had to have a ton of breaks to do it, though. So does anything stand as, let's at least monitor that one. Maybe NC State, maybe Louisville Saturday, I don't know.
NC State, they go to Raleigh, correct?
That's right.
Yeah, so it's at least the potential for a South Carolina-Georgia type setup. Now, granted, Georgia was at home, which makes it even more
crazy,
out of character, because they just couldn't hang on to the football. And not every turnover was Fromm's fault.
Right.
But boy, a couple of them were. And it was something to just watch play out the way it did. And then you have a kicker who had not missed a kick the entire season, had one blocked, and then missed what would have been the tying field goal. So I would say that the trip to Raleigh would be something that, okay, I would not expect it. I don't think anybody else would, but it would at least be possible. And going to Columbia.
Yeah, I should have pointed out, Clemson is off the week before it plays South Carolina.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not like Clemson's been a well-oiled machine. They've been almost exactly what you thought they were going to be, but they like you would say with Alabama's defense. Alabama has not been the team defensively you thought they might be or the team they have been of late. Clemson offensively has not been that team that's just purring like a kitten.
Yeah.
Pun intended.
There well, yeah, because going into the season, Trevor Lawrence, I get it, yeah, Tigers. Trevor Lawrence, he was, you know, favorite for the Heisman Trophy, and he's not in a lot of top fives.
He's not going to win it. Yeah,
yeah, he's not going to win it.
Too yeah.
far behind.
So, again, we're just talking about potential pitfalls. I would not expect anybody to think, and there'd be anybody who says, or any group that says, you know what, this is the upset week. I don't think you would find more than single digits in terms of the percentage of people picking against the Tigers in any of those instances.
What do you think about your boys tonight? Broncos and Chiefs, big one on Thursday Night Football.
Well, the Chiefs have had 2 weeks to get really upset and to take out a lot of frustration on the team in Denver tonight. So I'm expecting. Now, last year they played two games and they were both decided by a touchdown or less to make it incredibly frustrating. Seven straight wins for the Chiefs against the Broncos. I remember when it used to be the flip side of that coin. So I go into tonight with the bar very low and the hope that the Broncos could somehow continue what has been a rough slide and very enjoyable, mind you, for the Chiefs in losing these last two games.
You're on a two-game win streak, though. They're
That's
on
right.
a two-game losing streak.
Yes, and the Broncos beat the Chargers and the Titans.
Yeah.
I would not say that either one resembles. You could take the two teams together, and I don't think you would have the Chiefs.
Probably right.
You might have a better – you would have a better defense, but you wouldn't be able to match what they have on offense.
You wouldn't have a better quarterback, even with a bum ankle. I would take, obviously, Mahomes over Rivers or –
So if the Broncos can do what other teams have done, and that's bottle up the run and get after the quarterback, they have a chance. But they have to win the turnover battle. And the first start for Patrick Mahomes was Mile High Stadium in his career. And
was it really?
At the
yeah.
end of the
How
17
cool.
season.
That's right. And he just went out. And even though Denver was a non-factor at the time, like they've been for the better part since winning Super Bowl 50, their third Super Bowl championship, everyone.
We're all proud. Yes,
we're so excited for you and Peyton and everybody. Yep.
That's right. How could you not? The sheriff rode off into the sunset with a title. But anyhow.
The sheriff.
from that point on, it has been Mahomes' game. And he showed then that he's not bothered. He there's no moment that's too big for him. He just doesn't. Even when he's limping around, you can just see the wheels are turning, and he has an idea as to what he needs to do. And we'll just see whether or not the Broncos can impact what the Chiefs get done.
Last thing, excuse my ignorance, which I know you have to do often. Where did the sheriff originate from, the nickname?
That's a John Gruden thing.
Is that where it's from?
Is I believe 100%
on it is. Football?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is it really? So Gruden just dubbed him the sheriff?
Right before the Super Bowl, Cam Newton, when he's informed who won the AFC title game or something along those lines, finds out who they're playing, and he says... Ah, the sheriff was just his response. Like, that's what comes to mind. Ah, the sheriff.
Yeah, because I actually even forget now that that's what people call him.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a while since he played.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's retired now.
That's right. While winning the Super Bowl.
Right, he went out on top.
Yeah,
we're all very impressed, John Wilkerson.
Yeah.
That's right. The only other quarterback
to
step away after winning the Super Bowl.
I wonder if Tom Brady will do that like this year or next year.
I sure hope not.
Or 2028. John, we appreciate it. We'll check in again before Sports Talk at 3 o'clock. Farragut Bearden tonight.
That it
How
is.
How about this? Yeah.
Yes, I'll be parking next to the statue of Josh Ward.
And Which then, one?
Well, that's true. This would be the athletic one.
Okay.
The athletic pose, kind of the Heisman.
Yeah. You know, they keep sending that back to me. I offered it to them for free. I don't know why. It's weird. Hey, John, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you again here in an hour.
Always enjoy Thursdays. We'll talk to you in a bit.
Another hour of Sports 180 to go on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal.